soccer matters.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey!
So Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, remate de gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Oribe!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome into the second hour of the Best of Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. As always, it's presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. 713-322-HURT, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. They'll take your case. They'll work for you 24-7, nights and weekends. The Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Joining us now, he is Pat Onstad. He is a new general manager of the Houston Dynamo. He has been an assistant coach at DC United. He's been a scout at Toronto FC. He joined the Columbus Crew as an assistant coach, and then he has gone on to now become a guy that's a technical director and now the general manager of the Houston Dynamo. And Pat Onstad, as we all know, has had an outstanding playing career. Equally impressive is what he has done off the field post-playing career. He joins us now. Pat, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me on, Glenn. It's been a while, so I'm excited.
Yeah, we appreciate everything you're doing already so quickly getting into this job. And we're going to volley a lot of stuff off you tonight. I know you're a no-nonsense kind of guy, and we're looking forward to doing that. So I'm just going to start off, obviously, with, it's a bit sad. Tab Ramos now is going to be moved on as the coach. Just speak a little bit to Tab and how you came about that decision.
Yeah, I think we are in a results business. And ultimately, we felt the results wasn't where we wanted them to be. But what I would say about Tab is obviously it's been a very short time here, but I had interactions with him before, which I think I mentioned before. But when he was with the 20s, we had a player, Columbus had a player, Abubakar Keita, that was there. So I got to know him about 3-4 years ago. And we started speaking. And in the 5 days I was here, I can't, what a gentleman, like just a top class individual. And a guy I know when he gets another opportunity will go on and be very successful.
Pat Onstad joining us, the new general manager. Obviously, you're having to come in. You're having to make these decisions quickly. You're looking over a roster. I'm assuming you're going to want to have an input from who will be the next head coach. Do you have a short list of guys you're thinking about? I'm sure you've been thinking about a while.
Yeah, we have a short list. It's right now a little bit longer. I think, I've certainly been thinking about it, but out of respect to Tab, I have not reached out to a single person about the position until I spoke to him today. Wanted to make sure that there was this business. It's a very small community. And as soon as you start asking those sort of questions, it gets around quickly. And I think Tab showed his professionalism right to the very end in Montreal, right to the end. And you could see him and his staff were still tactically trying to figure out solutions. Montreal even down 2-0 in the last game of the year. So the last thing I wanted to do was to disrespect him, because I think the amount of effort he's put in towards his club for the last 2 years, he's bled orange, so to speak. And it's been impressive.
In a coach, what are you going to look for? Specific style of play, autocratic guy, democratic guy? What are some of the key things to you? I know the whole winner thing and all that, but what are some of the keys for you?
Yeah, for me, I mean, I'm a collaborator and I want to be involved, and not in the sense that I certainly don't want to set tactics or choose lineups. But, I have a plan for a soccer leadership group, and the head coach would be a big part of that. I think that's important that he helps guide the club forward as well. We use his expertise to help us become a better club. In terms of a style of play, I think the best thing is to talk about is the way Ted and I kind of see it the same, in the sense that we feel like we're in the energy capital of the country. We want to be on the front foot. And the word I've been using is a proactive style and approach. Now, that can take different forms, right? You can look at the New York Red Bull, the Red Bull form of a full-on press where you're dumping balls in and pressing. But then you can look at a Bayern Munich, a Liverpool, where they're counter-pressing and whatnot. So there's all sorts of different methods of doing that. But somebody that definitely is a type of coach that believes in trying to play attacking football and being proactive in the way they play the game. Last thing I think I want to see, and I think Houston fans want to see, is someone sits back and tries to transition and win games 1-0. And I know as a fan of soccer, that's not something I like watching. I like teams going down. I'd rather see them go down swinging than sitting back and then losing one leg.
Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad, a lot of people very excited about you coming back, Pat. All right, you talked about a soccer leadership here. I know you do think out of the box a lot, and I have a couple reasons why I believe that. But tell me a little bit about what that entails and how would that work?
I think in every club, certainly in the clubs that I've been involved in, well, at least with Columbus, D.C., and even here to a certain extent before with Dom, is I think there's always a select kind of executive group that I think goes and you know, kind of guides the club of where they want to go, whether that's through methodology, whether it's through recruitment. There's different forms of what that can take, through high performance department, for example. But I think for me, it's really important that you have a select group of people that are experts in their field and that they can kind of try to be best in class. I think we have an opportunity here with a new owner that is willing to invest. And I know we talk, the fans all want to know about players. Oh, what are they going to invest in players? What are they going to invest in players? But the other issue with our club is you know, we're a little behind in terms of the investment in the soccer operations department. So that's going to be very important, because I actually think that will coincide with a better product in the field and us making good decisions in terms of our player recruitment. So it's important that we build that out. But if I'm the only person make that decision and just I'm the only one hiring out and I'm trying to hire in departments that I'm not an expert in, that's not going to help the club. So I want to try to surround myself with people that are intelligent, have a growth mindset, and people that can help guide me into making good decisions for the club.
Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. We'll get more into that in a minute. Take us a little bit more into your job description, because one of the really nebulous areas to fans, and I know this through the years here in the last years, is they don't know who's making the player decisions. The general answer back is, hey, you know, we both agree on it. Well, we all know everybody doesn't always agree. Somebody's got to have a final say. So take us a little bit into that and how a roster will get built out and how you will collaborate with the head coach when it comes to players.
Well, I think when you talk about a soccer leadership group, I think you know, you'd have a bigger group in terms of maybe someone in each kind of aspect of the club. But ultimately, in the end, I think what works, what I've seen work certainly in Columbus, was having three people in the final decision makers. And one thing that we did in Columbus, and I think we did a very good job of, is if there was one of the three that dissented on a player, we moved on and found another player. It was as simple as that. And then the nice thing is we're fortunate we're in a game that there are thousands of players out there. Granted, you may, and I'm sure I know we passed on players that were excellent players that could have made it for whatever reason. But if all three of us aren't involved, or all whoever those three are, but the head coach, I would like to think, is one of them, myself is the other, is that if you're not all in agreement, then there's always going to be finger pointing behind the scenes. Oh, well, I didn't really want him. Why did you make him come here? What I want is a collaborative effort here to try to be successful. So where we celebrate together and, you know, we have that heartache together too when things don't go well, because we'll go up and down. But at the same token, if we're all invested in it, then we're all going to help each other succeed.
Pat, what about the academy and the production of local players, a city that's got a big MLS history with guys playing in the league going back to 96? How much say, how does that work with you and Paul Holliker?
Yeah, and I just met Paul a couple of days ago for a quick hello in the hallway. I would say, in all fairness to Paul, at this point, like, we'll talk and sit down, but I don't think that'll be a priority right now. The priority is to try to get the first team moving in the right direction. Once we get there, then I think, you know, we'll dig into the academy. But first and foremost, I think he's trying his best to try to make inroads in the community. I think that's important. Something that we went through in Columbus recently, where we really didn't have a great connection with the community, and we've worked really hard at that. Something I talked a bit about in the press conference in Columbus was a really good hire was Dante Washington that they hired there, an ex-player from Columbus. And he started running like youth partnerships and strategic partnerships. And he was really able to kind of get the grassroots growing again and connecting with the clubs after years of, frankly, neglect. And I think that's probably at the stage where we're at now, where we're trying to grow that again. And I know Paul's working hard at it.
Yeah, no question he is. And no question, though, that there were a lot of bridges burnt. So how was that successful in Columbus? Like, obviously, these are clubs that are run by guys that are making real money. They make their living at it.
Yeah.
How do you bring them in together, and how did that work in Columbus to get them kind of under your wing, per se, in a collaborative way?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was to get out of the youth market for us was you know, where you're not competing on a regular basis. So I think that was important. Once we did that, I think that's when the clubs looked and said, oh, okay, you are kind of like following your promise and you're following through. So at this point, like I said, it's going to be a little while before we can dig in there. But at the same token, I think those are kind of big steps forward when you can try to work with the clubs rather than recruiting against them. So what you want to get to when it's successful is you can help what you share your resources that you have. Listen, we have very good coaches in our academy. Obviously, in the professional level, we have great coaches, you know, U23 level. So those are resources we have. We have a great training facility. We have all these kind of resources that we can share with the community. And once people understand, like, listen, we're trying to grow the game as much as you are, that, you know, hopefully we get to a point where they say, okay, listen, we have a real special player here. Instead of us, I think we're at the point now that for them to develop further, they need to go to the Dynamo Academy. And that's ultimately what you want. But when you're always taking, it's tough for people to trust you. So you have to be able to give. And once you can start giving and showing that it's real, that this is a real, like, collaborative effort in the community, that's when you'll make some inroads.
So rebuilding trust is going to be a big thing. How else do you incentivize them? In other words, are there going to be mechanisms in place if a player signs out of one of these clubs that there'll be some compensation or some kind of, I don't know, cross promotion publicity?
Yeah, there's all sorts of methods you can do. Some clubs, you know, when we dealt with in Columbus, I was a privy to a lot of those conversations. Some clubs were just flat out, yeah, I'll take X amount of dollars and that would make us happy because we need it. We're a club that needs it. Or there's other clubs said, you know what we'd rather do is you have a, you know, a club night at a game and give us 200 tickets and we'll be over the moon and, you know, put us up on the big screen or let our kids be ball boys one day. So it depends on the club. I do think that's obviously I'm getting way ahead of myself here, probably a year ahead of myself. But I think there are lots of opportunities there and it's not necessarily one size fits all. But what I do think is where it's really important is that we're all growing the game together and we're moving the right direction.
Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad joining us here tonight on the show, and we really appreciate you coming on, Pat, and also doing the TV last night. I know it's been a very, very busy time for you. All right. Are you aware of how much the fans have suffered down here? I know you haven't been here. I know you've followed the team, but I want you to know from the fan base and our soccer community, which is prideful, do you really have a grip on how people have suffered down here over the last, you know, 8-9 years?
I think I have an outside idea, but obviously not living it. For me to say I have a grip on it and a full understanding, I think would be naive. I can certainly tell you from a season ticket holder standpoint, I can tell you numbers, and that is pretty realistic in terms of how the fan base is. And, you know, I have lots of, like, when I played here, that's the interesting part is that I connect with a lot of fans and would keep in touch with them over the years. And unfortunately, a lot of the fans that I've connected with are no longer season ticket holders. And that's sad. And they still have a connection with myself. And I'm hoping now that maybe that'll help and they'll come back. But at the same token, we've got to regain that trust. You know, we've got to put a product on the field that people can believe in, they can be excited about. And that's going to take a little bit of time. But I don't think for the first team, you know, for us, our goal is to try to be competitive right out of the gate. Like we're going to have to work hard in these next, you know, 75 days till preseason starts, but we won't necessarily have all the pieces in place by then, but we're definitely going to work hard as hard as we possibly can to try to get this team up and running. I don't want to, I don't want to be a team where we're still building come July and we're still bringing guys in and the season's half gone and we haven't been able to go. You want to bring guys in as quickly as possible and let them assimilate to the group and then hopefully get off to a good start at the beginning of the season. That's really important.
And Pat, I want to backtrack and just do you report to Ted Siegel himself, John Walker? How does that? Because look, these are all things I know I sound like I'm prying here, but these are all things that I get from the fans. These are the things they want to know.
Yeah. So I report to John, but I also have a direct line into Ted. I mean, Ted's the best way to put it is he says, I want over communication. So pretty much every email I've been sending to John and John's starting to roll his eyes a little bit because like this guy likes to over email. So I've been doing that a lot and then copying it to Ted. So I'm sure Ted's probably rolling his eyes in New York as well. So I'm very fortunate. Lyle Eyes is another gentleman that works with Ted. So between the four of us, we communicate a lot. I mean, through email, text, phone calls, there's a lot of communication going on and obviously with Tab's decision, there was a lot of communication there and making sure that we did this the right way and, with that decision. But, so far, I think it's been excellent.
So that's part one with Pat Onstad. Pat will stay with us through the commercial break. We'll be back. We'll continue our conversation with the general manager. Just a reminder here, FM Kitchen and Bar, great spots. One down in Montrose, Westheimer, near Montrose Boulevard, right next to Velvet Taco. It's FM Kitchen and Bar. Then you go to the location north of Washington on Shepherd. They've got the outdoor patio, the beer garden, craft cocktails, great chicken sandwiches, voted the best burger in Houston, lots of monitors. It is FM Kitchen and Bar. Stay with us. Part two of Pat Onstad coming up.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the Best of Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. A big shout out and thank you to longtime sponsor Jan Christensen and Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture. Get over to Fondren, get into their showroom. They've got Stressless. They've got all the great pieces of furniture that will modernize your home. You come into my living room, it's all about Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture. A big thank you to Jan and Danish Dynamite. All right, part two now with Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad. So, Pat, the other day, I'm trying to remember where I asked you this, but I did ask you somewhere about, you made the transition that a lot of guys don't make very quickly into the competitive side, assistant coach, scout. Now you're on sort of the organizational side, still on the competitive side, but more as a GM director type. But I know there was a time where you wanted to coach, and I remember you had reached out with Robert Mascott, who was also another that at that time you were really a head coach. Speak a little bit about how now the transition, because it's obvious when we look at your body of work, you've covered so many different areas and departments. You got to feel really confident going into this position.
Yeah, I do feel like I have a pretty good grasp on everything, but there's some areas, the high performance department, I'm certainly not an expert. The nice thing being the technical director in Columbus, I was in touch with the high performance department on a daily basis. So I learned a lot. I have a kinesiology degree, but that's what, 40 years ago or something. I can't remember how long ago that was. But I think we had stopwatches when we were measuring guys at that point. But so I have some background, but I'm certainly not even remotely close to being I'm probably a beginner at best. But anyways, I think for my transition, it was interesting because I wanted to be a coach like most players do. They think that's it. And I think the more exposure I got to it, I realized, listen, first and foremost, it's a very difficult job. There's extraordinary pressure in that position. And even more so now as the league gets bigger and bigger, more media, more social media, there's a lot of pressure in that position. And for some of these guys, what they have to go through on a week to week basis is difficult. not to say I don't enjoy pressure. It's something I've lived with, obviously, being a goalkeeper. You kind of get used to it. But I think when I started reflecting back on it, I didn't know if at one point I thought, you know what, I enjoyed working predominantly with the goalkeepers, maybe be an assistant. And the story goes, I was opportunity when the ownership transition took place from Columbus, is that I was given the opportunity to be an intern general manager for 6 weeks. It sounds like a very short period of time, but you get an idea of what takes place upstairs, and you get an idea of how the planning works and how you influence a squad and how you can support a coach and how you can support a scouting department, high performance department, academy. And I really enjoyed that. And Glenn, you've known me now since what, 2006, I believe. So 15 years. And I think, you know, I'm kind of an organizer. And I think being a goalkeeper, a collaborator, as I say over and over again, but I think that's exactly what a good leader is, and somebody that's at the top making soccer decisions. I'm excited for the opportunity, and I feel like I prepared myself for this for a long time.
Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad joining us. Okay, you mentioned the word pressure, and you know, look, people think I come on the radio here, and all I want to do is talk soccer. No, I'm also trying to raise the bar, maybe of the relevancy of the team in the community. I try to influence the other media members that are involved. But healthy pressure, it's something we all need. And I don't feel the Dynamo have that in this city right now. That is a gem you guys need to acquire. Are you aware of that?
Yeah. I think to be successful, there has to be some tension. There has to be tension on players, on staff, on front office staff. I think if it's just, oh, we'll come to the office and things didn't go so well on Saturday, that's fine. Then I don't think you're going to be able to improve. Now, does it have to be miserable where you're going back and forth? No, it should be a fun place to come in to work, and you should enjoy the people you work with and enjoy the project. But at the same token, there needs to be some accountability. And I think more than anything, we want to build a winning culture. And to me, winning cultures are built under tension and stress and a bit of pressure. So you need to perform out of that. And there'll be some players here that won't be able to cut it. I don't want to say it. There'll be also probably be some staff people that won't be able to do it, handle it as well. But to be successful in a successful organization, there has to be some pressure and tension there.
One of my concerns, and again, not that my opinion is that valuable, but one of my concerns has always been sometimes the lack of passion that I feel around the organization, people that have a deep seated love for the game and a passion for it. Those types of things can carry you through a lot of situations. I know you have it. I know the way you look at this sport now is because you've come through it and seen it grow to where it is. I mean, yeah. You know, you were playing back in whatever the ASLs, the Canadian League, you know, whatever the other leagues, and then graduated. And it's got to even be different now from 2006 to when you retired to where it is now. It's crazy where it is, really. But
it's phenomenal.
That passion, we need more passionate people. Not only in the front office or in the front office of a team, does that have to bleed?
I think we need them everywhere. I mean, predominantly, certainly the more fans and the more passionate fans, the better. But what I would say is the level, the soccer operation departments, everything, the high performance, all this stuff is phenomenal. And what we've done is we've now have a much better product on the field. We're not quite there yet, but we're starting to nip at Liga MX at their heels. And obviously with Columbus winning Campione's Cup, I mean, there's these little markers now that are getting dropped down, where MLS is now becoming, you know, a league in the region that is, you know, certainly a competitive level. But for us to get to the next level, I agree. I think it takes passion all around the club, within the club, the fans, the media, social media, you know, everywhere there needs to be passion about this game. And I'm hoping that I can help grow that here in Hunt Houston.
Pat, can you talk a little bit in general terms about the roster, about a type of player that you want? I mean, do you want a center forward? Do you want a holding midfielder? Do you want a playmaker type of guy? Is there anything you can say to the fan base about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is we need attacking pieces. We need to be able to score more goals. And I thought Montreal was a pretty good example of that. I thought in the first half, you know, we really struggled to get out of our own end. Montreal dictated the play. Granted, I think we could have been a lot cleaner on the ball. I think we had some individual turnovers and some bad areas, but, you know, from a system standpoint, we were set up fine. We just didn't have the attacking pieces that could make plays when it really mattered. And that even just means getting out of your own end and gaining possession that the opponents have. So you can tell we need a few more pieces. And I thought in the second half, the first 15 minutes, we actually were on the front foot and we came out more than anything, just aggressive and created a couple opportunities. Granted, you know, Griffin had a great chance off a set piece that would have been nice to see and see what we could have done with a 1-0 lead on the road. You know, it wasn't to be. And unfortunately, we kind of let ourselves down on a couple of set pieces. So I think for us, we need to, you know, it's going to be tough to win games 1-0 all the time. You've got to be able to sometimes, you know, maybe you give up 2 in the row, but if you can score 3, it makes things a lot easier for everyone on the club. So we need to find some attacking pieces.
Based on all your other stops in your career with, you know, you've really seen a lot of different things at a lot of different clubs at a lot of different levels. No, but I mean the lens is there. That's the beauty of all this.
People are picturing like Mr. Magoo glasses right now when you're saying the lens is
no,
there.
They're not. No, if I remember, the female fan base was very entrenched with the Pat Onstad and goalkeeper, believe me. So let me just get back to what I was going to ask you, and that's simply about, you know, you've been to all these different clubs, you've seen it in different ways. Is there a preferred starting point for you? Because fans love the tactical side. Would it be a 4-3-3, a 4-2-2? Is there anything you can say on that?
No, I believe more in a style of play than I do in an actual formation. I think if you watch all these fantastic teams around the world, no matter where they are, they change their formations all the time. You know, whether it's Boca Juniors, River Plate, all, you know, to Sao Paulo and then across the pond, like Liverpool, even they'll change their formations on occasion. So, and if you actually look at most teams, for example, you know, I used obviously with Greg Berhalter, when I worked with him, we would build up in a 3-4-3. But when we were defending, you know, we'd be in a 4-4-2 or a 4-2-2-2. Like, so you change all the time. I think formations is really just a kind of a snapshot of where your players are in position at the time. What for me is important is a system of play, style of play, something that everybody believes in, and then that you're doing that throughout the club. So if we could believe we're going to be a proactive style of play in the field, then we need to be proactive in the front office. We need to be proactive in the soccer operations department. This should be a club-wide belief, and that's what I'm hoping to get to. And I certainly know I have the support of ownership and certainly of John. That's what we want to do moving forward. This is the style we want to be, and this is what the club will believe moving forward.
How much a part of your responsibility will it be to interface with other departments, even on the business side, to espouse that message you just mentioned?
Yeah, that was actually a really good part of the whole interview process, and John brought it up in his defense, and he definitely had started that with Matt. I think when Matt was here, and Matt started participating in a lot of front office conversations and going down at, you know, we're physically separated. So that makes it, you know, by 15 miles, 20 miles, it does make it difficult at times. But I think I want to make an effort to make sure I connect with the front office and that they're comfortable. If they have great ideas that are going to help our club, that they're comfortable picking up the phone and giving me a call and discussing them. So the big thing is that we work together and, you know, we're one club. That's who we are, you know, whether it's the Dash, the Dynamo, our Academy, our U23s, we're one club and we need to be working together.
Pat Onstad joining us, the general manager. A couple quick ones more and then we're going to be done with Pat. We really appreciate this, Pat, because we do know how very, very busy you are. Let's go back to Columbus. Greg Berhalter, what was the biggest thing you learned from him?
Attention to detail. Attention to detail. He was that was a spectacular quality that he had. You know, I mean, he cared about individuals and all that stuff aside, but if you ask me, his attention to detail, and I think you saw that in the team that he put on the field. And when I talk about like us being proactive and is a kind of a culture, you know, and then having setting values for that, whatnot, you know, his belief at the time was that we were part of a collective, and the way they played was all 11 players had to be on the same page, and we played as a collective. Didn't have any superstars, and if they got a little too big, sometimes we move them on. But that's how the belief was within the whole club, and that's how the front office worked. It's how the soccer operations department worked, but it was all about his detail.
And I'm assuming, well, I know you have a great grip on the USL, the college game, and all these other levels of the sport. What about the Canadian Soccer League and the new league that's blossomed up there? Is that a place we can be looking for potential players as well?
Yes and no. I mean, it's surprisingly is a higher level than I thought it would be, especially with, I hate to say it, but the salaries that they have up there are not great. But these players are obviously looking for an opportunity, and what they've done a really good job of. It's actually an ex-Dynamo person, Ollie Gage, is doing a good job recruiting up there. He's been able to find some diamonds in the rough on small salaries to get an opportunity to kind of show that they can play soccer. So there are some players up there. The tricky part, of course, is now you're bringing in probably a project on a foreign slot, and foreign slots in our league with a few of the rules that are changing in the league that they're pretty valuable. So you have to be careful. You don't want to go and pick up two or three guys there that don't make it. You want to make sure if you're bringing a guy down from the Canadian soccer or professional soccer league, that they're going to be successful.
Pat Onstad, the last one we're going to lean on you with is just around, you know, specifics of where you may recruit. You know, there's a lot of people who are in the mindset, hey, because it's Houston, Texas, and the weather, we got to look south to us. I'm not sure that's true. I see Alexander Ring playing pretty well up in Austin with Austin FC. So what are your thoughts on that, and where around the world that you think are maybe good value? We obviously know that Argentina is, but kind of some thoughts on that.
Yeah, and I would argue Argentina is good. Well, it's I don't know if it's good value. It's a pricey market, but what I would say is that league translates well to the MLS. A very competitive league, and they work very hard. They have a really good work rate, so that's one reason I think you see a lot of Argentinians come up here and succeed. I don't want to push back too much, but I do think at times, like the Adam Lundqvist, the guys that are from Scandinavia coming to Houston are probably fewer and farther between. It's a difficult climate to adjust to when you've been raised. And listen, I'm Canadian. It took me a while to get used to it down here too. So I think the only thing that helped me is I had to go home to Becky, who's from North Carolina, and she just kept saying, "Dad, stop whining." So I kind of grew up quickly, but I do think it's important for us to try to dip into the Mexican market. I do think that's, and in all fairness, I think in the past, that market has been much too expensive for our league. But now our budgets are increasing, and now we're starting to get to a point where we can, I don't know about compete and outbid players, but some players in Mexico will look and say, you know what, that's the lifestyle I want. I want to live in the United States. It's an opportunity to go up north, and then may take a little less money to play in a different league and have a different experience.
I know you're going to say, first and foremost, it's all about the quality of the player. But do you think about the side benefit, the tertiary benefit of, hey, if it's a player from Mexico that people like, it's not a bad thing for our seats.
Oh, putting people 100%, in. 100%. And again, I've gone on the record in this, and I think the club feels this way too. We want to connect to the fans. And if the fans are excited about a player that we can bring in from Mexico, then it's probably better than bringing a player in from Norway. You know, so I don't think that the Norwegian community, With all due respect to the Norwegian community of Houston, there's probably a few more Mexican, a bit larger Mexican community here than there is a Norwegian community.
Well, Pat, you had enough questions for me. How about just a platform to you right now? Anything you want to say to the fans at this moment?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think the most important thing is judge us by what we're doing, and hopefully you'll be proud of the product that we put together, starting the season in 2022.
Pat, thank you so much. Excited. I'm personally excited to see you back. It's a great face to see. It's a great man of integrity. We watched you do it on the field. We watched you do it off the field. So as far as I'm concerned, you're the right man for the job. I wish you the best of luck in it. And thank you for all this time you gave us tonight.
I appreciate you, Glenn. And thanks for spreading the word about soccer. We really appreciate it. You're a big reason why soccer is here. And, together, hopefully we can keep promoting the sport.
All right, let's take a break here on the Best of Soccer Matters here, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com.
Loaded, ready to rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the Best of Soccer Matters here. brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Also, a big shout out to our great friends at Advantage BMW in Midtown. Get down to Advantage BMW in Midtown. Ask for Justin. Ask for Steven. Get yourself in that sedan, that X5, whatever it is you desire. Get in to the ultimate driving machine at Advantage BMW Midtown. He was a goalkeeper for the New York Cosmos. You know him as a color analyst for the New York Red Bulls. But most importantly, you know him as my partner on the World Cup. Just kidding. He is the one and only Shep Messing. Shep, how are you?
Hey, Glenn, that's a great intro, but I would have preferred you started with my friend. Yes. Our friendship, Glenn, goes way back. It grows every year. Broadcasting the World Cup for ESPN, yelling at the guy, whatever his name is, for the bagel, and Jed Drake. We had a good time. Thanks,
we have had a great time. By the way, Shep and I were talking prior. Shep is maybe the only guy who's ever played with Franz Beckenbauer, Eusebio, and Pelé as teammates. So think about that for a second. But I want to go back to a Pelé story. Yesterday, I did a college game for the ACC, Boston College and Boston University. And in some discussions with the producer before Mike, we came to Nickerson Field, and the night the Boston Minutemen were playing the New York Cosmos at the time, the Cosmos had Pelé. You were in goal for the Boston Minutemen, and the fans broke onto the field to maul Pelé. Can you give me some recollection of that?
Yeah, Glenn, I'm going to give you more than a recollection. And you know, every time you have me on your show, I give you a tidbit you never heard before. So you teed me up beautifully for that one. First of all, I want to set the stage, because that Boston Minutemen team with Wolfgang Sundholz, myself, Eusebio Simões, the international midfielder for Portugal, we were a terrific team, and we were owned by a guy, an owner, great guy, John Sturge, but he was going out of business. So literally, we were having trouble collecting our paychecks. We would have to go after a game, rush to the hot dog stand, try and see how much money was there for us to get paid. So that sets the table for this game. Pelé's first visit to Nickerson Field, John Sturge needed a big gate. So what did he do? He just kept printing tickets, and Nickerson Field filled up. He kept selling tickets. So when the game started, literally the fans, the stands were packed, but there was an overflow crowd that went right up to the touchline. So literally, I'm in goal, and to the side of me, right up to the corner kick flag, they were standing 30 feet deep, right?
Jeez.
This will describe to you what happened that sparked the crowd oversurging, Pelé getting hurt. So Pelé actually took a shot. It just went 1-2 feet wide on my left post, but the crowd was standing right there on the line. So the ball rebounded back into play, and one of his teammates put it in for a goal. That's why the crowd erupted, because actually there was no goal, but the referee had signaled goal. The rebound off the crowd onto the field. A guy hammers it home. Now Pelé is running to try and get away from a crowd that's surging onto the field. It was an absolute calamity. And look, the happy ending to the story for me, because there was a melee in the middle of the field. Some of the players, myself included, rushed to try and protect Pelé, pull people off him before security fought their way through the crowd to get him out. 3 weeks later, I played against Pelé at Yankee Stadium. We, as you know, Glenn, in those days, no draws. We go to penalty kicks, and Pelé takes the fifth kick at Yankee Stadium. I grew up a block away from Yankee Stadium. I save it, get a fingertip on it, Boston Minutemen win the game. The next week, Bob Rigby breaks his collarbone. I'm at the airport, Logan Airport, trying to fly to Seattle. And I get a phone call from the New York Cosmos saying they just bought me for 22 round trip plane tickets for the team to go to Seattle. I get to the locker room, and you imagine how I'm feeling. I fly down to New York. I go to Yankee Stadium. I'm in the locker room. Pelé comes up to me. He goes, I was the guy who said, get me that Boston goalkeeper. He said, because you played outstanding. You saved the shot, but you also saved my life in wow. Boston in the crowd. So
what a fantastic story. Oh, my God.
We still laugh about it today. It was scary at the moment.
Well, that's kind of ironic because Pelé's last game at Giants Stadium, you were one of the guys holding him up as you ran him around the field. So it kind of came full circle in that moment, didn't it? When you were lifting him up and carrying him around at that time, I mean, can you, you know, what's going on in your mind? I mean, other than you're lifting him, but you know, this is it for him. And this is a guy you've shared a lot of moments with.
Yeah. Look, Len, you know the feeling. When you're a teammate, right? It's only when you look at it after, and I see to this day the picture on my wall or in Major League Soccer that has that same picture in the hallway, that you realize the magnitude of the moment. All we wanted to do at that moment was honor him as our friend, as our teammate. The monumental nature of it doesn't settle in till later. It was the same for our final game with Pelé against Seattle in Soccer Bowl, the game being played in Portland. It was the first time you saw guys like Franz Beckenbauer in the huddle, in the locker room, almost teary-eyed, and we all gathered around, and Pelé never asked for anything. And before that game, in a huddle, Pelé had us huddled around him, and he goes, please, guys, one more game, right? How do you not do everything to deliver that to him?
Now, you've always said, and we're talking to Shep Messing, you've always said he's the greatest. Tell me why again.
His humanity, his humble nature, his grace, his dignity. So many times we'd go into a restaurant in Manhattan or another city. Pelé would always walk directly back into the kitchen because he knew he wasn't about being the superstar out, you know, in a special table signing autographs. He was a man of the people, and he knew his real visceral fans were working in the kitchen, the busboys and the chefs and the cooks. Same at an airport, whether it's in Tokyo or Paris or Rome, he would never walk away from a child. Never. And he'd have to be pulled away. Otherwise, he'd be signing all day. And I'll tell you one last mention of the man he is. I'm fortunate enough as his friend to have been invited down to Brazil. He has a 400-acre farm outside of Sao Paulo, a couple of hours away. He's got a big house there, his mother, his sister, his brother, but 400 acres. And when people in Brazil realized that Pelé had bought this land, they started migrating there from all over Brazil because the law down there is if the land is unused, not being used for agriculture or farming or produce, they could put a flag in the ground and live there. So what did Pelé do? Now thousands of people are starting to migrate to put a flag on his property. What did Pelé do? He built homes all around the perimeter of the property, probably enough to accommodate 1,000 people. Then, yes, he used the rest of the land for farm, agriculture, produce, but not before he built homes for these people migrating to get close to him who had no homes. And I'll never forget going down there. Pelé loved to drive this, you know, it's like a golf cart, a four-wheeler. And we would go around the property, and he'd always go around the perimeter just to see all the people that were there, wave to them, go out and shake their hands. And to this day, it really gives me goosebumps to see the kinds of things he did. And you know, the people of Brazil, I'd be there. It could be a 10-year-old child in one of the homes Pelé built, and they'd see us on the golf cart and they go, Goleiro de Cosmos. So,
yeah.
I mean, awesome. the legend for me is way beyond what he did on the field.
Well, you're a legend also. And I just, We got a couple minutes here. We got about 3 minutes. So I want to take you in before I let you go. I do want to, and these are amazing stories, and we're going to do more. And I do want to bring you back on the show to talk about the Indoor Soccer League venture you're involved in, because it's actually really, really interesting what you've told me about it. But we'll bring you back on and we'll do a whole special thing on that. But just give our fans here in the Houston market and around the country a little bit of a take on the New York Red Bulls currently.
Well, I'll tell you what, all you got to do is look in the mirror at your team in Houston, because this Red Bull team, I'm really surprised, because I had great anticipation at the beginning of the season. I still do, because they brought in a guy named Kevin Selwell at the top of the pyramid, sports director, whatever the title is. This guy knows what he's doing. He'll figure it out. He'll put together a good team. But for this season, so many new players, so young. They're the youngest team in the league. There's no real guy or presence on the field who can say, hey, settle down, play through me. They have given away so many points in games that they were leading in the second half. That speaks to the immaturity, to the youth. And really, they don't have that veteran presence who knows how to manage a game when you have a lead, and especially when you have a lead playing at home. So, look, like many other teams, Glenn, in Major League Soccer, Houston for sure, I follow them because of you and because of Tab. They're struggling, and they have to try and fix it. Good news is you got plenty of time left. You still can get on a run. Look, do I think Red Bulls are going to turn it around completely? I hope so, but, you know, I'm not betting on it. I do like the direction that Kevin Selwell is taking the team with Gerhard Struber. But at the end of the day, and that was a speech last week in the locker room after a disappointing loss at home to Chicago. Hey, look, we could talk and talk about tactics and press and counter press. Somebody's got to make a play. Somebody's got to win a game, right? Time for talk at this juncture in the season for all the teams. Time for talk is over. You got to get results.
Shep, you're a beauty. I love having you on, and we're going to get on again, and we're going to continue to talk. I thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. And as always, I send you my best back up to the East Coast from down here in the heart of Texas.
Well, I'm going to give a message as I say goodbye to your sponsors. You know, let's pony up. Glenn has the best show. It's why I do it. And I'm ready to partner with him. Get those sponsors to double dip. Let's raise the level, and I'll go on you with you, Glenn, anytime.
Boy, we'll have a great show. We got to keep working on that. We'll get that done. He's the one and only Shep Messing. Shep, thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Anytime, my friend. Be well.
So that's the final segment tonight on the Best of Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. A big thank you to all that have tuned in. Also, to my producer, Andrew Carlson, for all his great work throughout the year. Thank you very much for tuning in tonight.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.